fortunately for us, we have a very constructive relationship with our sister committee, economic development, so we are able to retain some of the key players in co-ops here. But I'm sure you appreciate, DTI, that many of our members sit on two or three committees, etc. But a great welcome to everyone here. And if we can just indicate the members who are away on business. I have an apology for the Honourable Kwabasa, who's in KZN on an oversight visit with the Economic Development Portfolio Committee. We also have a late arrival from the Honourable Salah, who has been in hospital, as you know, and is returning. And then we have an apology from the Honourable Alberts, who's away on party matters. And I think that, you know, we have a similar apology, is it, from the Honourable Khadebe, who's away on party matters at this particular stage, and also with the, well, those are the apologies. The Honourable Ariane Ambrosini will be arriving, but he's attending a subcommittee on joint rules as I talk. Yes, thank you very much, the Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. I did receive a late apology this morning from the Honourable James, who's had to shift his. You may have missed mentioned.
With apologies, I just thought perhaps there was some urgent matter. And it says here that I've got an apology from him requesting to leave at 10:30. Are you actually revising that? Is he not arriving until 10:30?
I'm afraid he's not arriving at all. He's submitted an apology for the meeting.
Have that in writing. I know that he will do that in due course because we have a conflicting apology here on the table. The only other person that I'm concerned about, as I said, is the Honourable Ariane Ambrosini. I'm not too sure when he's arriving. Okay, that's fine. Yes, I know, isn't it? The only thing I'm not asking about is your baggage. And that's just as well. But let me welcome the members of DTI. We have the DDG here, Mr. Sipho Sekode, the Deputy Director General Empowerment and Enterprise Division. We also have Mr. Jeff Ndumo, who's the Chief Director there, Empowerment and Enterprise Division. We have a few other people that I'm not too aware of. Don't know if they're from the Chief State Law Advisor. We also have a Director, Elise Cookamore. And Chief Director Nonkululeko Shinga, and also a director, and also another director, Ephraim Baloy. Where are these three? Yes, thank you very much. Unfortunately, that was just on the cell as I was talking to you. From the State Law Advisor's Office, we have Advocate Soraya Williams, right? Advocate Bongiwe Lufundo. Thank you. We have Parliamentary Law Advisor, Advocate Charmaine van der Merwe. I know I did. And we also have Advocate G. Roda. I don't know. Oh, is it yourself? Oh, of course, right. And then we have from DTI, yet another advocate, Advocate Johan Stratum. So we have got a full bench, if you like, at the back. And we have a quite strong bench from DTI at the senior level as well. And this morning, what we have on the agenda is a briefing on the co-op's second amendment bill and the regulatory impact assessment on the cooperative amendment bills. I also did have sent to you the RIA as agreed. Do you recall that? I also asked the committee secretary to send it with a covering note, which I'm sure you all received, indicating that it was important for you also to read the response from DTI to the RIA, which was included. And I only do that when there is a difference of opinion, which you probably realized once you read the RIA. So that being done, we're going to immediately hand over until pretty late, I mean a good hour, to the department itself. So it's over to yourself then, Mr. Zakorde.
No, thanks very much, Chair. Honourable members, I think we will go straight to the Cooperatives Amendment Bill, the second bill, section, the one under section 76. And Mr. Jeff Ndumo and Elise Kukemur will deal with the details. Jeff and Elise.
Appropriate intergovernmental relations framework must be established in accordance with Act and in line with other legal requirements. So we are talking here the page 3, line 5 to line 24.
Yourself are getting a bit confused here. Let's just do this again. You've got various lines. The first one you said is appropriate intergovernmental. Is that correct?
Yes. Appropriate intergovernmental relations framework must be established in accordance with the amendment bill and in line with other legal requirements. Right. Yes. Right. Right. Okay. And then intergovernmental structures established must comply with principles of cooperative governance. Line 3, page 3, line 24 to 52. Page 3, line 24 to 52, that one, which goes into the next. Is it the next page? Yeah? No, it's within that page. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then now the next one, which I think maybe we're jumping now to the provide for framework for intergovernmental relations. Now that is page 5, line 32 to 51. Yeah. Okay. And then dispute on conflict resolution must be dealt with in accordance with framework for intergovernmental relations, page 5, line 27 to 31. Okay. All right. And then functions of intergovernmental structures and administrative arrangements. All right. And then there the aim is to provide clarity on functions, administrative and procedural arrangements with regard to intergovernmental structures. Clarity is provided on the functions of the intergovernmental structures, i.e. promote cooperatives, ensure coordination on planning, budgeting, provisioning of services, advise minister and members of executive council on matters relating to cooperatives. Page 4, line 1 to 22. And then administrative and procedural arrangement must comply with the framework for intergovernmental relations, page 5, line 25 to 52. Okay, that's it. Yeah, 252. All right. And then the next one is the Interprovincial Coordination Committee on Cooperatives. Here the aim is to provide clarity on the establishment, composition, and functioning of Interprovincial Coordination Committee on Cooperatives, clarity on the composition of members, functions of the structure, and frequency of meetings. Page 4, line 30 to 59. Right. I think then the other one is the continuation of the structure, which is the interdepartmental, provincial interdepartmental and municipal coordinating structure. Aim is to ensure coordination within provinces among provincial and municipal spheres of government. Clarity on the establishment of provincial interdepartmental and municipal coordinating structures, functions and reporting. Page 5, line 1 to 26.
Proceeded thus far with, so that we all know where we are with
right.
this particular bill, this piece
right.
of legislation.
Right.
What we'd like you to do now,
right.
The DDG and yourself,
right.
is to indicate to us very briefly the purpose
okay.
of the second bill,
okay.
per se.
All right.
And after that, we want to go clause by clause.
Okay.
Okay. So we now have found our way. You know, we've got
okay.
the map.
All right.
So, the purpose,
all right.
and thereafter, clause by clause, ceasefire clause.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, the thank you, Madam Chair. The purpose is to, in a nutshell, captured read at the beginning of the bill itself, it stipulated clearly, is to ensure compliance with the principles of intergovernmental relations, to provide for intergovernmental relations within the cooperative sector, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Here we are ensuring that because even in the 2005 Act, the 2005 Act clearly stipulated that the key responsibility of promoting the development of cooperatives falls on the three spheres of government. So what now the Act, the 2005, did not do was to therefore elucidate in detail those coordinating structures, how that coordinating the work for cooperatives development in all the three spheres of government is going to be carried out and is going to be executed. What now this amendment is doing is to give clear clarity in that particular regard, because earlier when we were implementing cooperative development, this area was an area of tension, and it was an area that was undermining the development and cooperatives of the development of cooperatives throughout the country, and where each of the spheres of government's responsibility and functions are located in that particular regard. So what this bill is doing is to clarify those very, very clear now, so that moving forward, all the three spheres of government know their functions, their responsibility, and where their mandate begins and then ends. That's the practical aim, Madam Chair, of this particular bill. Now, to go into the line by line, if that is accepted, we will start with the first line, which deals with the functions of the agency in respect of satellite offices of the Cooperatives Development Agency, which is page... No, I think we're going to go straight to the bill itself. Yeah, the bill itself, yeah. So, which is... Section 91D, the agency, in order to achieve its objective in respect of satellite offices of the agency, must enter into a memorandum of understanding with the members of the Executive Council responsible for economic development in the province or the municipal council, as the case may be, on the most effective delivery mechanism for cooperative support. That is 5 to 10, Madam Chair. And then B, there, in consultation with the member of the Executive Council responsible for economic development or the municipal council, as the case may be, may delegate some of the functions of the satellite offices to a provincial department responsible for economic development, a metropolitan municipality or a district municipality, as the case may be, subject to any conditions the agency may impose in respect of such delegation, and must implement the memorandum of understanding, which must be monitored through the MINMEP structures. We know that within the trade and industry, there is a MINMEP structure which is chaired by our minister, involving all the MECs of economic development in the provinces. So we are therefore saying that that structure will provide the monitoring aspect of that work.
Rector, I was just listening to that clause, B.
Yes.
Line probably 12.
Right.
In which you indicate, in consultation, the agency, all right?
Right.
In consultation with a member of the Executive Council responsible for the economic development,
right,
or the municipal council,
right,
as the case may be. So it could be in consultation with the municipal council.
Right.
And I was wondering if this would be correct to say, if the agency in consultation with the municipal council,
right,
could delegate to the province. I thought it would have been the other way around. You know, you don't delegate from a lower structure up. Now, this is just a clarification.
Right.
Because it does say all the municipal council.
Yeah, what it does, Madam Chair, is it follows that logic that it will be from the national to the province to the council. But what it does is that a consultation with the council will be done in simultaneous with the province,
because it has to follow that particular logic. It's just that is we're elaborating those particular steps in sequential order. Without, there will be no going directly to the municipal council without varying the executive council of the province.
What I'm going to do is to flag that for the subcommittee to look at. Are we on the same understanding, the Honourable Mabasa? Can we flag that? Because that's not exactly as it seems to read.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
Thank you. Do move on then, please.
Right.
Just make a note.
All right, now we then follow the next one, which is the insertion of Chapter 12C in the Act 14 of 2005, which therefore is intergovernmental relations. Applicability of intergovernmental relations framework policies and legislation. Intergovernmental relations between the three spheres of government and specifically the department, provincial government departments responsible for economic development, municipalities, provincial public entities, municipal public entities, the agency, the tribunal, the commission, structures established in accordance with this act, structures established in accordance with any other national law, and structures established in accordance with provincial law must be interpreted in accordance with the principles of cooperative governance referred to in Section 41, Subsection 1 of the Constitution and the provisions of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act 2005, Act Number 13 of 2005, national and the applicable transversal provincial policies and other legislation regulating intergovernmental relations. To proceed, intergovernmental... Intergovernmental structure.
And the same applies to the parliamentary legal advisors as well. Thanks.
Madam Chair, I'm proceeding. Intergovernmental structures, 91DD, subsection 1. All intergovernmental structures contemplated in this section. Paragraph A, functioning at the commencement of the Cooperative Amendment Act 2012 or established or recognized as contemplated in national or provincial legislation will continue to function as contemplated in the relevant enabling legislation. The following intergovernmental local government structures are recognized for purpose of this act, intergovernmental local government structures as provided for in national legislation, and any other intergovernmental local government structures established by the minister after consultation with the minister responsible for cooperative governance and traditional affairs as contemplated in this act and any other national legislation, the minister, after consultation with the minister responsible for cooperative governance and traditional affairs, may, by notice in the Gazette, declare provisions of this act applicable to any structure contemplated in this chapter. Intergovernmental structures established as contemplated in this Act must, in addition to their functions contemplated in this Act, comply with the principles of cooperative governance referred to in Section 41, Subsection 1 of the Constitution and the provisions of the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act 2005, Act Number 13 of 2005, national and the applicable transversal provincial policies and other legislation regulating intergovernmental relations. To proceed to the functions, Madam Chair. Okay.
You correct me if I'm articulating it wrongly. I'm thinking that as we address each clause, how will it be if Mr. Ndumo briefly outlines what the purpose is, taking it from the existing act, just to say, you know, pardon, to briefly say, in the previous act, the existing act, this was the position, and this amendment seeks to achieve this, and then he then goes into detail. you know, I'm wondering if we can't, where possible. I know it may not be possible everywhere.
Yeah, at this point, page 3 may be a good point just to look at that. If you look back, Mr. Ndumo, at your first point on page 3 there, the applicability of intergovernmental relations framework policies and legislation,
right.
Because all of this is insertions, it's a page of insertions.
Yes.
Why was this necessary?
Okay. The 2005 Act, it provided a law, which I just wouldn't, I must, it's there right in the opening section of the 2005 Act, calling for all three spheres of government to play a role in the development of cooperatives. But what this did in our operation, there were challenges in terms of what will be the role of municipalities, what will be the role of provinces, what will be the role of national government in this particular work. So that, therefore, there is that relationship and there is a seamless flow of those activities and the implementation and the providing of support to cooperatives throughout all the spheres of government. So what happened is that in our engagement with the provinces and even also with all the stakeholders in the three spheres of government, there was therefore a call that we need to clarify that particular aspect, hence then this insertion. I don't know whether I'm clear.
Yeah, and just to add, Chair, I think, yes, thank you. Just to add, Chair, I think with the amendment of the Act, if all is approved like we are proposing, we are going to establish new institutions like the agency, and these institutions will be rolled out in the provinces and the municipalities, and the provinces and the municipalities will be responsible, you know, for the administration and the support of these institutions. So I think by these insertions, we are trying now to address all those issues. Thank you.
And in the first instance, you talk about policies. So the policies were also didn't adequately cover, and now you believe it does cover in this insertion. Is this correct?
Yes.
If you go to the next thing and you then talk about the structures.
Yes.
There were
yes.
certain structures that were not in existence, if that's what you're saying.
Yeah, and then what we're saying is that these structures must now be in existence, then therefore we're saying to provinces in relation to their municipalities, these structures must be created so that there is a chain of accountability moving from up, down, bottom, up, all right, so that everybody is clear and there is a seamless flow of information from the bottom to up and then from up to the bottom so that we can have a picture of what is the kind of support that is provided nationwide to cooperatives. And then we can then be able to work together so that there are no duplication as well of whereby you find that the cooperative is funded from one municipality, but we also fund it at the national government. So we want to be able to get all of that information through these structures so that we can then be able to discipline the process. All right. These are the kinds of, this is what we want to achieve. But also in the policy front is to say that if municipalities developed within the IDP programs some policy proposals, those policy proposals must be in line with the provincial levels of government, which is the sphere of government, as well as the national government, so that there is a seamless, that is, alignment of policies throughout the three spheres of government. That is also another approach, hence then that first law of the policies. All right. Okay. Yes.
It's not really okay. No, you know what I'm looking at here?
Right.
The intergovernmental structures. You've establishing an agency. You've already indicated that in the first part. The policy needs to look at that. But then when you get to 91DD here, all intergovernmental structures contemplated in this section, functioning, you get the timing established, etc. But you come down to, I think it is 2B, 2B2. And any other national legislation, what are we looking at here? Because that's a very broad thing. Anything else going? Something you may have overlooked, it seems, and anything else that's going to arise. It's a very, very broad thing here. It seems as if you can get up one month and decide X. Any other, someone finds it out. Is that going to adequately cover you if put to the test in a court?
Madam Chair, we took advice also from our legal experts here around that particular matter, particularly in relation to the governance structures of government as a whole. And therefore, that was a recommendation to say that we might have, in some cases, a scenario whereby you have certain structures that might have not been clearly articulated, but they fall outside. So you want to cover ourselves so that we can then be able to have this particular authority to recommend or bring them on board where we find that they are relevant for the cooperative's development. That, I think, is the rationale and the thinking behind that. But it's not to say that all other structures will be there, but it will be on a case-by-case basis so that it allows that room to be able to therefore bring some of those structures where we see that they are outside, but they will be relevant for cooperative development.
This in the subcommittee as well, should there be any issue that arises. Let's move on then to the functions of those intergovernmental structures.
That's page 4, functions of intergovernmental structures. 9.1EE. An intergovernmental structure established as contemplated. Okay. Thanks, Madam Chair. The purpose here is just now to say, since we have elaborated already in detail what these structures may be that we've put in the earlier clause, so what this subsection is doing is to say, what are the functions with these structures are going to be playing as we envision them in the earlier 91DD, those structures that we have already talked to. And then now, these are the functions. Promote cooperative governance, that's the first one. The second one is to ensure coordination on planning, budgeting, provisioning of services and support, to and monitoring evaluation in respect of cooperatives, and then advise the minister and the members of the council responsible for economic development on any matter related to cooperatives.
You don't have to read word for word. Sure, members, if we are following as we are,
right,
you're going to be saying 91, page 4, etc., A, B, but allow time.
Okay.
You know, at the same time, you would have read it for people to study it and raise their hand. And as say, anyone can raise their hand in this regard. You're now on to D.
I have a broad question, and then from there, a very specific question. The broad question is promotion of cooperative governance. You know, in practice, are we doing very well in that regard? Are we not? Have we also put in some instruments of making sure that we don't end up with tasks that are not fulfilled because each sphere says the other sphere will do it. The other sphere will do it. You know, that. Because I also look at local government. I'll just give an example. Where we have, in Soweto, where we have sewerage breakdowns all the time. And local government does not have the capacity to do it, but it does not refer it to provincial and national. So aren't we going to have the same challenge? Just to go back to what informed and what measures have been taken for effectiveness. But then the other specific question is the budgeting. Does it mean that each sphere will be budgeting for the same task, and how are those budgets to come together, you know, and to be monitored, since they will be coming from the three spheres?
Just on that one of the promotion, okay, I think it's number three, is it? I mean, to promote good governance. What number is that there? 91EEA. To promote cooperative governance. Just on that one, this is a function. Within the piece of legislation you've got here, have you got how this will be carried out? Because they say, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And that's what our legislation seems to be. So as you're going along, just address that and then move on. All right. And it'll be something, Honourable Mabasa, that we'll want you to tackle in greater detail in that subcommittee as well. Thank you.
We've already presented, Honourable Mabasa and also Honourable Chair, we presented the other Section 75, the other bill, and within that bill, we talked to the tribunal. All right, we said the tribunal is going to play a role in compliance, to ensure compliance of cooperative legislation and also all the required compliance issues that cooperative must meet to ensure sustainability of cooperatives. And therefore, this tribunal is also going to be working with the municipalities and also with the provinces in that particular regard. So what we were envisioning is that there has to be that particular closer relationship with all three spheres of government, so that if municipality, because we envision a situation where municipalities are going to have the data of their cooperatives that falls within their municipalities, and then they pick up some challenges as they are interfacing with their cooperatives, that some of the cooperatives are not complying with issues of good governance, seven cooperative principles and all the issues that goes with that, then they are able to engage with the institution that is established for that accordingly, so that they can then assist those cooperatives to strengthen their governance issues there. Because one of the issues that we pointed out in the when we're presenting on the Section 75 was that one of the issues that are undermining the sustainability and viability of cooperatives is the violation of these cooperative principles within the members themselves, and therefore we want that to be strengthened. So it means that what we're saying is that the level, that sphere of government of municipalities, will be engaged with that process in their cooperatives within their own jurisdiction, and be able to pick up those issues and then be able to liaise with the institutions accordingly and be able to provide that necessary support. That is the essence of the approach. And it could also take place at the provincial level, broadly speaking, whereby they deal with all of the issues at the level of provinces and then relate that with the structures. And then where some of the issues of governance are about lack of capacity, the cooperative development agency is going to come in there and provide that capacity support to strengthen those issues of governance. That's what is envisioned there in that particular regard. With respect to budgeting, so at the moment, this is the reality, and we came on several occasions to the portfolio committee presenting this issue as a challenge, that most spheres of local government, this is a mandate that is not budgeted for. Most of the spheres of local government, when it comes to their IDP programs, cooperatives don't have budgets. We can go through a number of them here. Don't have budget to even the capacity to engage with their cooperative within their all spheres of government. We want to be able to encourage that that must change so that there are budget capacity at that level to be able to enable municipalities to engage with the issues of supporting and developing their cooperatives at the level that is at that municipalities. Okay, so we want to encourage that from provinces right up to municipalities.
We can move on because you've got to E there, 91EEE, so you're on E there, which we are now reading for ourselves, and move on from that. That's line 1516.
Yes. I think today we to perform any functions and duties in accordance with the principles of the cooperative governance referred to in section 41, subsection 1 of the Constitution, the intergovernmental relations, and other applicable transversal provincial policies and legislation regulating intergovernmental relations. And then F, perform any functions and duties as may be determined by the minister by notice in the Gazette.
On which, as I say, just read that headline each time and then allow us time to read for ourselves. The administrative and procedural arrangements.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they here we are just addressing the issue on the administrative and procedural arrangements just to say what are those administrative issues that are coming about as a result of these arrangements. And then we're saying every structure, administrative and procedural arrangement must comply with the framework for intergovernmental relations contemplated in section 91JJ. Yes. Can I proceed, Chair? Establishment, composition and functions of interprovincial coordination committee on cooperatives.
Interprovincial Coordination Committee, because when you look at it, we seem to be having a lot of new structures around the place.
Yeah. Okay.
Just very briefly explain how this is intended to work.
Yeah.
Yes, Honourable Mabasa.
And also to make reference to what is practically existing at the moment across government.
Okay.
You know, where we have adopted a certain measure because we have seen it succeeding somewhere, if you could also point that out, so that where we are just coming with a brand new measure which is not informed by other practices, we should also note, you know, so that we know we are venturing into a completely new measure. But in the same area, we're on 91GG B, Roman 3.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking myself, why not all? Because it says other national departments. So I'm asking myself whether when we think of cooperatives, are we thinking of them relative to some departments, or we think all departments should play a role, even if the roles are going to differ, depending
mm-hmm.
on what the department does. But I just thought, why not all? Why some?
Okay.
And I don't know whether I should ask all the questions or one and... Because I have two other questions in the same area. In the same area.
All right, go ahead.
On number 7, right at the bottom, what happens if they don't meet? Where? because you know we do have a problem where other committees that have been set up are supposed to fulfill certain functions. But if they think that function is not very critical, they will apologize and make it a second or an alternative issue, especially if it is highly placed people. They are busy, they are overseas. So I was asking, what happens if they don't meet?
Those points then, Chief Darby.
All right. Madam Chair, thank you. And then let me just start with the latter, and then we'll go to the former. The rationale or the thinking behind the department is that if we build these issues into the bill, it then begins to make it, in a sense, much more something that cannot be ignored or cannot be avoided because it is within the law, and therefore sign, and therefore capacity has to then be developed and be built by these three spheres of government to ensure that these meetings take place, and then also there will be a need for accountability as well. So it's not an issue that people will just, therefore they will be violating the laws of the land, and therefore, I mean, it will mean, therefore, the law of the land, which will then mean that people have to explain themselves why they could not comply with this kind of legislative requirement. So it's not an issue of whether they will not meet or not. When it is in law, they must do it. So that's how is the rational thinking for ourselves, because what it therefore means is that it cannot be ignored or avoided, as used to be the case in the past, because if it was not in the law. So capacity by all these three spheres of government, it will have to be built, because some of them, the reason why they don't meet or they don't even participate, you find that there is no capacity there, and there is not even budgeting that has been built into these particular requirements. Then now once it is in the law, then the capacity has to be then come on board, and then the meeting will then take place. We don't envision them not meeting, because it would then mean that they violated this law. All right.
Absolutely. We all know for a fact that meetings don't take place. We know that. And let's not talk about capacity. What I want you to explain to us, is there anything in this legislation, if they don't meet, what, you know, within a year or so many meetings in a year, what is it that the department has put into the legislation? We can't have structures going on and on. And in this very department, there are meetings that are not taking place.
Okay.
And they are highly capacitated.
We've got min-max structure that is going to give oversight to this particular this work, and therefore it will then be requiring for the report to be provided. We didn't create penalties, if that is what is thought of, that there will be these penalties that are going to be... We didn't create issues of penalties in that particular order. There is nothing which is a penalty in this bill that says if they do not meet, this would be the penalty that they are going to be experiencing.
Now, then a follow-up point is that the chairperson is quite right to say there are certain... There is a min-max that was supposed to fulfill certain obligations, and it frustrated the whole department, it frustrated us. Certain MECs could not come. So it means, and cooperatives are not necessarily something that people, it's just one of those tiny things at the corner. So this is what will be sacrificed. So that's why the chairperson is saying, it's not as if these things have not happened before, but we were just stressing a point, a weakness.
Honourable Mr. Sekota.
Thanks very much, Chair. I think we are taking the point. We will have to look at our budget, because I would suggest what we need to do then is for the DTI to participate as a national department in these structures, just to ensure that we provide at least that secretarial function so that we schedule meetings, you know, we
Sorry, Honourable Randa Merva, did you want to just pop in here?
Chair, I was going to wait till the end because I have a much broader question which relates to the conversation we're having now. Can I raise it now? Because we are guided here by the principles of the Constitution as is stated in this Second Amendment. And the Constitution says that an Act of Parliament is all the principles, and then the Act of Parliament must establish or provide for structures and institutions to promote and facilitate intergovernmental relations. That's what we're doing. But that Act of Parliament already exists. That is the one that you referred to under the framework paragraph, which is Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act 2005. Okay. Now, what I think my colleagues and I are very anxious about is that you're talking about the same people. They're all meeting in different, this is the economic development of the village and the town, and they're all the same people. And it is unrealistic to now impose, in my view, another set of requirements on these people to meet and form this Interprovincial Coordinating Committee on Cooperatives and so on. I really have a sense that we need to simplify the structures and enforce the existing legislation, which is a legally binding piece of legislation that requires people to cooperate. You know, and if we aren't able to get it done through the existing legislation, why do we think that another structure is going to do it better? I mean, I also think that we should look very carefully at the financial implications for the state paragraph that you have at the end, which implies that a business case, or it says that a business case is being developed, and that for each of these institutions, it's still being developed, and it will be the costing will be done through the business case. So we don't know how much it's going to cost because the business case is still being developed. So to now suggest that maybe DTI will have a series of officials that will monitor all this, I think it's a duplication. I think we should try and simplify the way in which we structure this. I can understand fully, I'm not being hypercritical, because I can understand fully that you've identified a problem and you are trying to fix it. But I think when we try and fix it, we better step back a bit and say, what are the other reasons for these things not working? And will such a coordinating committee and such a this and such an agency and such a tribunal and so on actually deal with the problem? Or does it add another tier of complication to a system where capacity isn't there and so on? So, I mean, it is a big question that I'm asking. But I think we really need to step back on this very delicate matter, because this thing can turn around communities if it works properly. We don't want to overburden it with layers and layers of coordinating structures who write minutes, and next week another set of minutes and so on. And I think we have to try and stitch up our government in a way that makes it easier and not more difficult for these systems to work properly. That's really what I wanted to say, Chair. And maybe I'm completely off the track, because it is going to affect how we deal with this bill. Thank you.
It's exactly, I think, in a different way that the Honourable Mabasa has raised this. I myself feel that, you know, the intentions of the department are very noble, and I think we want the cooperatives raised. We want them to work. This is exactly what the Honourable Mabasa is looking at. But when you go through this, we know that many of the points you are raising here have failed in other pieces of legislation. We know that. Now, is another structure going to enable it? I think this is where we're having a challenge. It's almost like saying, how do you keep warm in winter? Do you have lots of heavy blankets over one very light thing that takes you to Mount Everest, you know, that keeps you warm without suffocating you?
it achieves the same principle. So I'm merely using that as an example because I have that experience quite often with my own husband, you know, wanting heavier and heavier stuff. So we're saying that what is it that we want to achieve? We actually want to get co-ops working where? Not at the top. We want them working on the ground. And unfortunately, you know, if you look at this, and I do want you to go through the rest, but I think it seems to be flawed in three areas. The number of structures it is contemplating. It's the development of a whole new bureaucracy, and I don't think that's going to work. And bureaucracy is different from capacity development, very different. The second thing is what I didn't think about initially, but which is something we must think about, Honourable Mabasa, I'm sure you would agree, are the financial implications here. I didn't really think about it at the time, but with all these new structures in place, surely the money we're going to spend trying to get them to work would be better spent on the ground. So I want us to continue going through, but I can tell you the financial issues are going to come back to us. The second thing is the fact that it's pointless setting up structures, MinMax included, who are supposed to take into account a number of these provincial issues, if they're not working. You can't have a MinMax without a minister, for example. Can't. You can't have a MinMax with only three MACs involved. Do you know? You actually have got to have both. Now, we've had this problem before. We don't need to recreate it. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Yes, thanks very much, Chairperson. I'd just like to underscore everything that you and Honourable Funamadu have said. It's quite right, and I agree with you. I'm very concerned about the creation of an additional layer of bureaucracy. But simply to add to that, though, provincial governments are extremely suspicious, I think is the best word. Of receiving new responsibilities without any new funding. And from what I understand, I might be mistaken, in which case you can correct me, you're expecting them to do all of these new things on their existing budgets without any financial or without any significant financial support from the DTI at a national level. Now, you know, expecting them to do that just because it's in law, as we've said, it doesn't mean that they're going to do that. But it's especially so that they will not do that if you really get their backs up by expecting them to do it on the existing budgets. That's just not going to fly.
I think those three points are being captured. Honourable Mabasa is concerned that it works. He wants it. We want it. But it has to work. If we can move on to page 5. Was it yourself, Mr. Zakhorda, you wanted to comment?
Yes, ma'am. No, thanks very much for the suggestion. But I wanted to add that at the moment that there are structures in the provinces, Chairperson, but the issue is they work in silos. They're not coordinating at all. With this bill, we are trying to bring together coordination, make them work in one structure. You have at the provinces economic development departments running their own co-ops programs, but at a very disjointed level. What we are trying to say here is just to form a reporting structure that will come up to the minister of the DTI, the DTI minister. That is why we say under the MINMEC that is co-chaired by the Minister of Trade and Industry and the Minister of Economic Development Department, these we will report to them through these structures of what's happening at municipalities, interdepartmental and municipality level, and then at interprovincial. And these structures, they report directly to these two ministers at MINMEC, because now the MINMEC that we have now is being co-chaired by our minister, Dr. Rob Davis, and Minister of Economic Development Department. So the whole idea really is to take this existing individual administration and of the tribunal, we also ensure that we don't burden the province system. Thanks very much.
Take the last point from the committee. Yes, Honourable Van der Merwe.
Chair, I think we need some new thinking. And I can perfectly understand, and I respect actually what you've done here, because you clearly thought very deeply about exactly that problem and the way it's not working. I think what we need is a new department in every department that's called troubleshooting. And that department takes that problem of that province that you've got, where they're doing their own thing on cooperatives and it's not coordinated with any, goes there, tells them what they're supposed to do, how they're supposed to report, and fixes it. Because instead of, now we're going to send them this bill, they're all going to interpret it differently. Then we must litigate, you know, because they're not doing, you know, they're going to go to court and say, but that's not what the bill says, and so on. Troubleshooting. Go to the department and tell them, shoot the trouble down by fixing it in line with what we already have. If they've already got structures, then we must make them work, or we must disband those ones, you know. I think it's a bit of a radical idea. Government doesn't like the idea of doing something different, but I'm very much in favor of a troubleshooting wing of government.
We'll leave the troubleshooting just on the side for the moment. No, because very often these, I think, very constructive ideas take a little assimilation. Right. So what we'll do, but we're going to flag that one. I'd like, and I keep on saying this, Honourable Mabasa, there's a lot that's coming to the subcommittee. You can hear the members' concern here. We're not happy with things as they are. But at the same time, we do agree on the principle. We have got to have more effective intergovernmental coordination. We all agree on that. It's how we're doing it that the problem is. Do you see that, Honourable Mabasa? So if you could tackle that in the subcommittee and try to come up with something that's going to address this. It may not even be a piece of legislation that is separate. I don't know. But I don't want to preempt what the subcommittee will come up with. All right. Just because we're given a piece of legislation doesn't mean to say we pass it or, you know, send it to the House. We need to look at the merits of that. And I think that is why you yourself said, let us have the purpose. Why are you doing this before we hear what it is? So at this particular point, we're going to go speedily through the next section on page 5, the establishment of the provincial interdepartmental municipal coordinating structure. And I think that's 91.8H. If you can just indicate to us briefly, Chief Director, the purpose, and we'll raise any questions in that regard. Because I think that's on page 5, and it's to do with the training as well, or the academy, or you know. Page 5 of the second piece of legislation. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Establishment of provincial interdepartmental and municipal coordinating structure, 91HH. So what this portion seeks to do is to provide for the establishment and functions of the provincial interdepartmental and municipal coordinating structures, which I must say that these structures are already there. The word establishment doesn't mean that we're creating something new that is not already in existence, but what is happening is that it is not functioning as it is expected to function. And it's not clear to the people who have created it, and it's not even aligned. And people don't know what they need to do, hence then we're giving clarity to them so that they are clear what needs to be done. So that moving forward, then we don't need to go back and explain these things. They are very clear written for them, so that then it becomes just a reference document that they utilize in implementing their mandate. So a provincial interdepartmental and municipal coordinating structure must be established in every province by the provincial department responsible for economic development concerns, which must also outline the role of local government in establishment of the municipal coordinating structure. The provincial interdepartmental and municipal coordinating structure must develop provincial cooperative strategies. Okay? So what we're saying to them is that develop these strategies that take into account the unique character of the province. So that's what we're clarifying there. And then we're saying they must consult with all the stakeholders there, coordinate the cooperative development and support activities for all provincial government departments dealing with cooperatives. You've got at the horizontal level, Department of Health, Department of Work, all of this. They must coordinate that work very clearly so that we've got one work to say in the health sector, this is the support in this particular sector, this is the support that is there. Then we have a picture in the province what is happening around these matters. All right?
Read each point there. You coming right down to support the provincial structures of the agency and the provincial cooperative training academy.
Yes.
Now the thing is this, and submit reports. This whole issue here is dealing with how you're going to be doing it, the reports, the strategies. But you've just said something of interest. You said it's not really establishing it. It's already there. These structures are already there. Am I correct or not? Because if these structures are there in most of the provinces, maybe
not all,
then perhaps it shouldn't be the establishment, but where these are not already established, they should be established.
Yes, that's what we're saying.
It just seems to me now. So one may need to review how you've worded that.
Okay.
Because you've just indicated they are there in many.
Yes, they are there.
So it's more the wording here to bring it into line.
Yes.
And where it comes, a lot of this, no doubt, is already on the paper.
Yes.
So I just think that it's a matter now of you're saying where this is not happening, this should be
happening. Yes.
Now I just want to hear from yourself quite clearly that this is the case.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, very clear, Madam Chair. We're saying that you've got a situation by in certain provinces, these structures are there, most of them, but in others, they are not there. So that's why we're saying to those that are not there, established them. And then the ones where they are there, this is their role and this is what they should be doing. Okay.
You know, I know we don't want to dampen that passion of yours in any way. Please. But, you know, this is law.
Yes.
Honorable Mabasa?
Now, here I just wanted to ask, in trade and industry,
right,
and even going into economic development,
right,
what examples do we have where provincial, municipality and national, where because they work together, they have delivered best? I know I'm asking it for the second time, but just under this context, if it is not only within trade and industry, even if you go and borrow some other successes from other departments.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, we have a case in point, and I hope when we're visiting the provinces, we're going to pick this up, particularly in KZN, where the economic department there is working closely with its municipalities in driving the development of cooperatives, and it is functioning very well, and hence, therefore, that province is leading on cooperatives development. So, clearly, we've got here a very clear model that is telling us that if these things are coordinated in such a very systematic, orderly fashion as we are envisioning, this is the outcome you end up getting.
Yes, my last follow-up on this is I think we are not aiming high enough.
Okay.
I think we are going to come here after 10 years. We will find we are still where we are today. Because I have often heard that KZN is our success story. But I want to argue that that is not what we should call an ideal success story. Remember that I was part of the participants in the in Maritzburg. We all have different versions. But all I'm saying is that I think cooperatives must aim very high if we are going to fight the poverty and create employment and the inequities. So that's all I'm saying on this point. I'm saying this because even if all the country functions at the level of KZN, we will still be as poor as we are. So we have to aim higher.
Exactly, though, what would you, having heard that, Honourable Mabasa, perhaps then in the subcommittee you can draft or begin to craft for us a suitable clause in that regard, because I think you have said this at least on two or three occasions in the committee here. So we do, is there KZN are utilising legislation that is already provided in this regard? It is doing that, as you yourself said. And how can other provinces be persuaded to do the same thing? The question comes back to us always, is it legislation that is required? You know, that is the question. Because one doesn't want as a country simply to pass a law because we don't feel like implementing some other piece of legislation, or we can't. We need to pass law that is really urgently needed in this regard. So that's why this is coming under the spotlight. But just taking you to the point of if there on page 523 or 4, where it says, support the provincial structures of the agency and the provincial cooperative training academies. Exactly where are these academies?
Madam Chair, we had proposed in the earlier version of the bill the cooperative training academy, which now is going to be, we have now going to not establish it ourselves. It's now a mandate that's going to be taken up by the Department of Higher Education. So what we're saying, therefore, is that once these academies are established, therefore the municipalities and the provinces must therefore support them if they are there and make sure that they're functioning. So it comes from that angle. But I want to say that the bigger vision on cooperative development in other countries is where you find countries like Kenya have established departments that are having footprints all over the country, where you've got plus minus. I think where we're going to be visiting Kenya, if that is going to be the case, you will see that they are looking at plus minus 3,000 personnel that are just dedicated to this level of form of business, solely on it. So these are the things that are there. But, I mean, given South Africa's priorities that are so many, we didn't want to go to that high level of those bigger structures like that. Hence that we are working with the existing ones and strengthening them and then tightening them so that we can then be able to yield a bigger value for South Africa in that particular regard. That is the approach, and also factoring the financial burdens to the fiscus in this particular regard. These were issues that informed this particular approach than anything else as we are making these proposals. Thanks.
Members, if that's in order with everyone, we can then move on to the dispute and conflict resolution. Perhaps you can share with us, is there any dispute and conflict resolution currently, in current legislation? If not, how does this address it?
Great. Okay. We are proposing that if there are any dispute or conflict in respect of the exercise, performance and carrying out by an entity contemplated in Section 91D, its powers and functions as contemplated in this Act or any other law must be resolved in accordance with the framework contemplated in Section 91JJ. So this is an insertion to say that because if you look at it in the previous Act, it was not there. So we're inserting that if there are any particular conflict that arises through this particular Section 91JJ, this is how the mechanism of resolving any disputes in regard regard to these structures that we are creating, and particularly also the responsibilities that we are elucidating here. So, but currently there are no such mechanisms as it exists within the South African context now, even though these structures are existing. So that's why we are giving clarity in that regard.
Framework that will be provided, is this correct?
Yes, yes.
Right. Any comment on that, members? Honourable Van der Merwe?
Well, I think this is the most important part of the bill, myself, because it gives the minister the opportunity to say, okay, this is the framework, now do it, you know, rather than all those other structures. I don't know why we can't keep it in this way through these kind of guidelines that the minister will issue. But anyway, we can look at it again. I'm sure the subcommittee will look at those kinds of details.
Board at the moment, I hear Honourable Kotze, you've been very, very quiet there, although I know you've been following co-ops very well in the last sort of 4 years or so. Framework for Intergovernmental Relations then, this whole framework, 91JJ, if you can indicate to us again, is it in the current act, why is it here now, and the purpose?
All right. Well, as I said, that this is a new insertion. It was not there in the previous 2005 Act, the current Act that as it exists, and then now we are inserting it. The Minister must, subject to the principles of cooperative governance referred to in Section 41 of the Constitution and the intergovernmental relations, after consultation with the members of the Executive Council responsible for economic development and entities contemplated in Section 91DD, develop a framework for intergovernmental relations and publish the framework contemplated in paragraph A by notice in the Gazette within 6 months after commencement of this amendment, and every intergovernmental structure recognized or established in accordance with this act must comply with the framework contemplated in subsection 1 in accordance with the principles of cooperative governance referred to in section 41 of the Constitution, the provisions of Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act 2005. And the applicable transversal provincial policies and other legislation regulating intergovernmental relations. So what we're saying is that the minister will therefore develop these frameworks after this bill has been promulgated, this amendment bill. So yeah, I will just stop there for now.
Any comments or questions to be raised by the committee on this? I have just one. We come back to the point, you know, you've got here a framework for intergovernmental relations, and this is exactly what you've been saying you want to get. There are procedures in place. There are these things. But in fact, a number of provinces and perhaps councils are not utilizing it. Within this framework, you've got a piece of legislation, the Intergovernmental, you know, Relations Act, etc., of 2005. What is it in that act that the minister can, by way of guidelines, refer? The whole thing I've realized is that when you pass a law, in order to change anything which is not working, it needs to be amended. It's another piece of legislation. Whereas if you pass and adopt guidelines, the minister puts through a set of instructions, regulations, secondary regulation, if you like, it's that much easier to change than it is for the, you know, your first or primary legislation. And I'm always a little bit cautious when I see these different guidelines coming about. Is this not more suitable for secondary legislation? So this is a question I'd like you to respond to.
Well, we see these guidelines that they are going to be in the regulation. They're going to be articulated in the regulation, meaning that they can easily be altered much easier and quicker than will be the case with another law. That's the envisioned approach. That.
In this particular area, I'm looking on my left as well. And then we come to if that is the case, then we go to page 6, is it? The amendment of the table of contents. To me, this is consequential, you know, so I don't really think it needs a political input per se. 12C then, intergovernmental relations. Again, I think it is a technicality that we are referring to here as well. But throughout this, all pieces of legislation, we come back to the fact, which you do have in your memorandum, all bills need to be scrutinized in terms of the financial implications. Now, what would be constructive for us is if the department, and if you yourself, DDG, and the chief director can tell the committee what are the financial implications here. Has this been looked at? And what are they? Because right now, the last thing we need to do is to burden the South African communities and our government with further implications.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. We have done exactly that in terms of the Cooperative Development Agency. We've got a business case that we've formulated with, we can share with the committee on the Cooperative Development Agency. We have also developed a business case for the tribunal with clear costing in that regard, which we'll share with the committee as well. And then also in terms of the intergovernmental structures and all these structures, it is the current budget that we every year report to you year in, year out of how the other provinces are doing that we every year report it to you. That is the cost at the moment of these structures, because we don't see any other additional cost other than to refine things and make sure that the things are much clearer from the point of view of these existing structures in delivering these kinds of things. So, yeah, we will say relatively we do have those costings which we could then easily make them available on request, Chairperson.
Honourable Mabasa?
Colleague Chair, I'm speaking broadly on the issue of costs. I will assert that where additional costs need to be incurred, if such costs are going to seriously advance the development of cooperatives, then they are justified. You know, I will want to put across that view that we should not have the failure of cooperatives because we could not fund certain mechanisms that will make them a resounding success. But at the same time, we should not think that funding alone is a solution to everything. So I thought I should make that point.
I think it is a cautionary note that's being echoed here. On the one hand, we do want sufficient funds to enable the effective operations of the co-ops here from a national point of view and provincial and local. But at the same time, what are the other impediments to this? Now, what would be useful, I think you've already offered to make available to us the business plan for this, and I think that that's, we do need that, because we have to actually take a decision on whether this has financial and what these financial implications are. So we need that as soon as possible. Presumably it's not here today, but if this can be a written explanation and detail matrix can be available to the committee secretary, this can be made available to the subcommittee as well as other members, so that at our next full meeting we can look into this, but that the subcommittee, even before we do, Honourable Mabasa, would look into those issues as well. The second point is with respect to the issues raised here, is just how essential is it to adopt another piece of legislation here in this regard? Can it not all be dealt with in secondary legislation. Third, or alternatively, is there a way that this bill can be, you know, radically curtailed, sort of shortened, so that only the critical issues, I'm just taking, for example, the one in which we spoke about establishment, the establishment of all of these, in fact, it is there, the principle is there. The reality is people are not implementing. The law is there, requiring them to do it, I think that's what you said, but not all provinces are implementing it. One. Two, you're looking for some, coordinating structure, provincial structure, which you believe isn't currently in place to report to MINMAC. I hope I'm understanding you correct. Currently, there's no provincial structure. Is this what you're saying? Currently, there isn't, with respect to co-ops.
Yeah. What we're saying is that there are structures that are existing in the provinces. What we're saying is that most of these structures are not clear as to what is the work around cooperatives they need to do, and therefore also that where they do exist, some of them suffer from lack of capacity and all the kinds of things that are there, hence the issues about budget and planning and also reporting and accountability on in writing that. And therefore, in some instances, they are not existing, so we are calling for them to be established where they are not existing. So it is that kind of stuff that we're having there, so that we have one in terms of good practice, good practice throughout the country and throughout all the spheres of government that is uniform and is aligned, that can then be able to provide you, the members here, a broader national picture of what is happening around cooperatives, and then you can then be able to see where they are lacking, in which particular municipality, in which district, and then we begin to be able to target and zoom in accordingly, and then have those particular accountabilities built into it in a way that will enhance the work. So on the question of whether this could not be done by the regulation, I mean, I will take the cue from the House if there is a stronger view that we should maybe put this as a regulatory instrument. We will maybe look at that as a particular approach and then maybe draft it as a regulation and build it in there. But we were of the opinion, as we stand, that it has to be in the bill, very clear, so that it begins to give that weight that we were looking for, so that that was the an approach we had adopted in this regard. Thank you very much.
Side, I've said sufficient. There have been points raised, I think, broadly in this regard. What I think the committee should now agree on, perhaps, is that the subcommittee, which is meeting this afternoon, am I correct there, Mr. Herman? Yes. Will deal with these issues that we clearly, I don't want to use the word unhappy, but certainly we're not satisfied with as they stand. And Honourable Mabasi, you will certainly look at the financial implications in a broad regard here. Secondly, whether the legislation as it stands, if every clause should be present, if certain clauses should not be rephrased, especially where such frameworks already exist and a slightly different approach is adopted. But thirdly, I'd also want to hear, you mentioned that although these structures may be in place in certain provinces or councils, although they may be in place, you indicated that they were operational only in a silo manner. You know, they worked in silos. Is this piece of legislation necessary to make people work out of the silos and to coordinate and cooperate? So, and to me, this is quite an important thing because it's the intergovernmental relations. It not only affects co-ops, it affects a number of structures that the committee is dealing with and entities. So if the subcommittee would look into that as well and come forward back to the committee, Honourable Mabasa, on a way forward in this regard. I should also just indicate that the public hearings are on board for the, I think it is the 23rd, it's the Tuesday, the last week, I think, of July. Is it the 24th? Tuesday to Friday of July, the public hearings, okay? We're not talking about the study visits now, but the public hearings in this regard. I think we also want to thank you, Mr. Ndumo, for reissuing the PowerPoints with the page numbers. And you can see, as a result, we didn't have quite the same confusion we did in the previous meeting. And that's been very constructive in this regard. Is there anything else members would like to comment on with respect to this before I come to the study visit being planned? We're only talking of public hearings at this point. Anything else? No. Mr. Hermans, if you would indicate to the committee what has been proposed to Mr. Froese.
A study visit to Kenya has been proposed, consisting of 7 members of the committee and 2 staff members. The visit will take place immediately after the public hearings, probably leaving the 28th of July and returning the 2nd of August. The subcommittee will the following week also visit provinces which will be identified by the subcommittee, which most likely will happen a week from the 8th of August to the 10th of August, 3 days, basically going to the KZN, Mpumalanga, and also could do some of the Western Cape of cooperatives. All this is subject to approval by the House Chairperson. We have not received any approval on the matter yet.
That has gone through. It's just that, as you know, Mr. Froese has been in Rio, no doubt dancing away. But there we are trying to address the climate change issue. Honourable Mabasa?
Oh, I want to believe that even where we have proposed certain provinces, we may reconsider or add, because I was in Northern Cape yesterday, and I think that there are lessons that we should draw. Whether the lessons are by indication to failure, or whether they are lessons by indication to success. So I just spoke on this broad principle to say it will be good if we leave that door open.
Yes, Honourable Hill-Lew.
Yeah, Chair, having done some reading over the last week or so on the matter, it seems that there are a number of fairly successful and fairly large cooperatives in the Northern Cape, which I would be very interested in going to see. In fact, the biggest rooibos tea cooperative in the world is in the Northern Cape. So,
being rooibos tea, it is here. But yes, well, they've just called it rooibos here. Just to come back to the choice of places, it's not quite as simple as that. You will recall before now, we indicated, in fact, last year, we reiterated it this year, it was our intention to go to each province, you know. And we have been to Northern Cape already. Now, I'm not saying these things are cast in concrete, but we have been there. We have been, of course, to the Western Cape, and we have been to the Eastern Cape. We haven't been, and we've been to Gauteng. The provinces that remain are KZN, Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and the Free State. And, of course, I shouldn't forget Northwest. Now, we wanted to see something that was working fairly well in terms of co-ops, and we were informed this was KZN in terms of South Africa. And an area where things were not working that well and more of a rural area, where would it be? It would actually be Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, Free State would be the choice. So I'm saying it was done on that particular basis. Part of the challenge, Honourable Mabasa, is that we would move, if we would, KZN that you've only got 3 days, it's not, you know, it is actually quite challenging to do, even as a small group, because remember, you're not going with the whole committee. You'll be going with your small group to this, to do the oversight in the provinces. You see, the five of you, is it four or five? Four members. So I don't want to say no. Let's first get the approval. Once we have the approval, I think let's negotiate with the House Chair whether there can be a change. But I'm indicating to you that we have taken a decision on the on this as a committee in terms of the principle of where we should go, etc. And, of course, during these visits, it's quite constructive if the department joins the committee, you know, at least one or two of you in this regard. So as soon as we have a decision, we will brief you on that. Members, just 5 minutes. So I'd like to say thank you very, very much to the chief director in the first instance who has dealt with this in detail and the team. Also to the DDG who will be remaining with us, I know, on other matters, and the rest of the team. But after tea break, we will address TRIPS and SPY. TRIPS, rather. But before we go to tea, I just want to share with you three other issues regarding the program before some people leave. I have indicated to members that they have got the RIA. I don't think it is a document that you can spend just 1 hour on. You know, you do need to study it in detail. And when we return on that matter, which will be in the week of July, the last week of July, I imagine that we'll have a much fuller committee at that particular point. The subcommittee will have had a chance to look through it so that we will come back better informed. I don't want to deal with issues that perhaps not all of us are that well informed about. So that's the reason. So you've got it to study and look at and read. But the issue with respect to the program is this. We had a request last year by the committee to look at the anti-piracy type issues that were coming up. You will remember this came up with respect to the Intellectual Properties Act, the piece of legislation we have in front of us. And at the time, the Deputy Minister could not avail herself. She was overseas. She is likely to be here more frequently in the next 2 months. And this may well be the opportunity for us to look into that for 45 minutes to an hour and attach it to the public hearings day. We're going to be here. Let's look at it on the same day. I am proposing that on the on the Wednesday of the public hearings, that is the 25th of July, that we use that opportunity, okay, for 45 minutes at the beginnings, you know, the opening welcome, and then deal with that, and then follow it up with the public hearings. I hope everyone can see that on a Wednesday. And then the other matter that has come up, you will recall that we had asked the NCC to make themselves available on the labelling. You recall that particular issue and the budgets in due course. And they were not available because they had a meeting with the Auditor General at that time. Now, looking at our program here, it seems that it may be constructive for us to deal with them on the Friday of that same week. The committee secretary tells me that it would appear as if we would be able to finish with the public hearings with just one or two left over for Friday. So we still have a full Friday here, so we could perhaps put the NCC in at that particular time. Now, I'm merely making the sharing this with you so you can alter your programs accordingly. What the matter will be on will be the budget labelling issue or the labelling issue, as well as the finalisation of the budget. Yes, the first one will be, I think, the 24th of July is a Wednesday. Is it a Tuesday? committee week, a Tuesday, the public hearing. Sorry, make it Wednesday the 25th of July for the anti-piracy, please. In the morning, Wednesday the 25th. Wednesday. So your times are not changing. It's just some of the issues. And then if you can indicate Friday for the NCC in the morning. Now that may or may not be a full day, and I want people to be totally aware of it. We may end off with the NCC, or we may take the tail end of the public hearing. I don't want us to come into the Western Cape. Someone did mention the Western Cape as a possibility for the consumer, for the subcommittee, because we are holding the main public hearings here, and people can come here from the Western Cape, I do believe. Okay. Is there anything else on the program that you'd like clarified? Yes, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Sorry, Chair, if you could just read out the dates of the public hearings again so that I can just put them in.
I'm going to let the committee secretary do this again. It is on your program.
It's Tuesday 24th, Wednesday 25th, Thursday 26th, and Friday 27th with those changes in terms of the NCC.
Final clarity, it means public hearings as well as a committee item, another committee item will be on the same day. We will also take the advantage when we have a quorum to pass any minutes that may be outstanding. I hope I'm clear on that. How many minutes are outstanding? About four. So there are not many minutes outstanding in this regard. Okay. So on that particular note, can we just adjourn for a 5-minute tea break then? Thank you. And Honourable Salah, thank you. We did put your apology in. But I'm so pleased you're looking much better than you did in hospital. Thank you. You're very welcome. Thank you. or good morning still, is it? It does seem like we've passed quite a bit. As long as we've got the DG here, which we do, and I don't know who else would be assisting you on the matter. Let's just have a look at it here. Chief Director, and Mr. Beloy, the Director. Is that correct? We have the three people with us. And that's, are you going to start off with the thrips, or are you going to start off with SPI? Yeah. All right. So we're all here, the members, and who's just joined us? Oh, yes, the Honourable Salah. Over to yourself, then, just for the next, perhaps to stop in between and just to separate them for any questions or comments. Can we move on that basis, DDG? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. But before we start, Chair, he came late. I just want to introduce to you and the honorable members the Registrar of Co-ops. He is part of the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, Mr. Rector Rapo. Rector?
Oh, yes, thank
you. No, thanks. Chair, these two programs, the support program for industrial innovation and the TRIP program, they were intended to support our industrial policy in South Africa. The support program for industrial innovation, its main purpose really is to take research that has been done in the universities and develop it into prototypes from where companies could then commercialize it. That's a vision of the program, to promote technology development and commercialization in South Africa. A little bit of a background, this program started in 1993, but the predecessor of this program was the so-called Industrial Electronics Support Program. But then in 1993, government decided that we will also support other sectors, because the previous one, it was only focusing on ICT, mainly the electronics. Then in 1994, we changed the program, and it was catering for all the sectors. It's really to promote the development of technologically innovative products and processes that are commercially viable even globally. It focuses specifically on the development phase. That begins at the conclusion of basic research and ends at the point where you have a prototype. Again, you know, we comply to the World Trade Organization stipulates, where as government, we cannot be seen assisting their companies to commercialize for reasons of fair trade and all those things. But we can assist and entrepreneurs taking a project from a research stage and develop a prototype, hence the grants that we provided. Because the SPI is the matching grant program where we provide part of the funding and the companies there provide the rest. And it's administered by the Industrial Development Corporation on our behalf, because of the expertise and the engineers they have at the IDC. Because when you assess the applications, we have to send people to go and verify the proposals And when the product has been developed, we also need the engineers to go and check whether the milestones have been met. So the IDC is managing, is administering this program on our behalf. The SPI, as we call it in short, is divided into three areas. It's a product process development scheme, which is really intended for small B-owned companies. It's up to 2 million rand in terms of the grant from the PTI. And then we have what we call the matching scheme. The matching scheme is bigger than the first one in terms of the maximum grant we give, up to 5 million. And then the partnership scheme, which is really the biggest of all the three, and it can go up to 35 million rand. Well, focusing on the product process development scheme, as you can say, it promotes development of new products and processes. It's non-repayable grant, which can be 50% up to 85% depending on the black ownership and women participation in that company. As you can see, the numbers there, honorable members, if it's less than 25% black owned, then you get a 50% grant, and so forth. And the maximum per grant is 2 million. Sorry.
Questions
later.
I misunderstood. I thought you were saying as we go on.
No, that was just for the co-ops because of the legislation, you see. So unless it's a question of us not being lost or something, okay.
Thank you. Going to the matching scheme, which is the second one, our second component. And this one provides a non-repayable grant up to 75%, also depending on the empowerment issues within the company and the women empowerment. And the maximum grant you can get is up to 5 million. And again, the payments are made against predetermined milestone. If you achieve a milestone, then you get the grant from the government. And the last one is the partnership scheme. Really, this is designed for large-scale R&D projects above 5 million. The grant is of 50% of qualifying costs incurred during the development phase. And because of the nature of this one, the rules incorporate a conditional repayment mechanism in the form of a levy based on sales. When we have commercialized your product and we are generating returns, then there's a percentage of those sales that we have to pay back to government in return for the grant that you receive. It must demonstrate additionality and causality. What this means is that the technology and the product that you are developing, it must be an innovative new product, something that is not there in the market at the moment. Your action must have caused the development of that technology and the product. Whereas the first two, even if the product maybe is there somewhere else in the world, if it's something that is new to us here in South Africa, in our economy, we allow you to develop it and we fund it. And this one, the partnership scheme, is also targeted for the technology platforms. Technology platforms is normally it's an initiative where you find many players in the industry, you know, the research institutions, universities, coming together and putting money together and develop a certain technology platform from which you can then develop a product. Let's say they could come together to develop a fuel cell technology. And from the fuel cell technology, then you can develop many products. So it benefits the partners that came together and pooled the resources. It also benefits the rest of the economy. These are the categories supported. We support cost on the direct labor, the people who are employed to develop that prototype product. the direct material, the material that we used in developing the product, if there was any subcontracting, maybe subcontract to experts who then assist you in the development of that product, and the pro rata portion of the capital required, and any patents related to the product. Chair, these are just statistics and what we have achieved so far, and then also looking at the future. In the 2009 financial year, we had approvals of almost 110 million and 57 projects were supported. And in the last financial year, we have 73 million approvals and 52 projects were approved. Going forward, the second row of numbers there, the third and fourth row of numbers, 2012, 2013, in this current financial year, we have almost 53 million rand in our budget. And we think roughly we support about 20 projects going down to 2014-2015. We thought we'll just share the picture on the spatial distribution of the projects in the 2011-2012 financial year. These are the provinces that benefited, as you can see, the usual suspects, Gauteng and Western Province, 20 and 19 there.
Now on the PowerPoint, they may well be the usual suspects, but I think it would be quite constructive as you're moving on to indicate why they may be the usual suspects.
Yes.
You know, why is it that you only have one in Northwest, just as we're going through?
Yes. Well, I think you mentioned, I think Balo will also come in there, but it's always the case of, the metros having all the infrastructure, being able to get all the information from government institutions, and again the IDC itself. In the past, IDC didn't cover all the provinces in terms of their infrastructure. I think it was the Western Cape and a few others. But obviously now IDC, I think they have offices in all the provinces of South Africa, if I'm not mistaken. But maybe, Balu, you want to also add on that issue?
I think the explanation for the distribution in terms of high concentration in Western Cape, basically it's Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban, that have always enjoyed this high concentration of projects supported in those areas. The reason basically is that if you look at Cape Town and Johannesburg, these are very strong metropolis with respect to the ICT sector, and the program, you know, historically has been focusing on electronics. Therefore, when ICT came into the picture, the telecommunication came on board, and you know, from the bandwidth ban and the innovation hub, as well as Gauteng economic propeller, the projects that are recommended through these instruments to the program are more biased towards ICT, as it were. But what we're doing is we are gradually trying to improve the participation in the other sectors and in other provinces specifically, due to the fact that we have put that product and process development support program in order to accommodate smaller projects that would come from, you know, our peripheral provinces like the Eastern Cape, Northwestern Cape.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, if you look at the projects by industry sectors, as we said, Chair and Honourable Members, originally the project, the program was focusing on electronics and software. That is why you have those spikes there. the electronic software leading, then miscellaneous manufacturing, and then the rest of the sectors coming in. But then we're just looking at 2009 to 2011. And the impact so far, starting from 2008, we're supposed to have maybe had a last column there for the totals. But these are the numbers. Total sales for 2010, 2011, 60 million. This is the information we got now from the SPY recipients who have commercialized and selling their products. The total exports, 133 million for the 2010, 2011 financial year. The total sales were 193. Then the jobs created for that year was 441. And those are the number of responses we received, 50. If we continue with the impact, as at 16 March 2012, we have approved 1,511 projects, and the projects are worth 1.94 billion since the SPY was inserted in 2003. And we have generated approximately 6.8 billion rand in terms of taxes. I'll let Ephraim to say a few words on each success stories there, Chair, if you don't mind.
Talking to the Notech Identipark project, basically what happens is that in large buildings like our airports and so forth, it becomes difficult when you enter into a parking area to identify an empty space. Now, SPY supported the project where as you enter the parking lot in the airport or in large buildings, you see the green lights and the red lights. Once a car gets into park into that spot, then the red light goes on. Once it moves out, the green light goes on. And at the same time, you are able to see the number of open parking bays within each floor. So it becomes easier then for you to go and get parking in that area. And that's what basically this project actually supported. The interactive driver education, basically this project intends to address the issue of obtaining driver's licenses illegally. Now what they have done is that they have developed a system in which the drivers or the learner drivers can use this particular instrument to learn how to drive, and they can determine the ability of the learner, whether this person can be able to then go into the roads, as well as the learner is using this particular technology, we are able to determine the extent to which they are not competent or skilled in terms of driving. So by the time they get to the road, you know that this person is actually qualified to get a driver's license for both a light and heavy vehicle. So that's what we supported. And I think this is a state-of-the-art simulator in the sense that you don't have to be on the road to be tested by an inspector who you can easily bribe and then go back to the office and get a driver's license. You sit there, you are all by your own. It is computer simulated. Whatever mistakes you commit, it records, and there's no human intervention in that respect. And that's what we're trying to do for transport purposes. The Nguni Jews, Uvio Jews, this was developed by Mr. Norman Petty. I think this was one of the fruits that were actually used or they were eating whilst in exile. Now what happened? happened is that when Mr. Mpedi came back, he decided to set up a facility where he collected this Nguni fruit and sapped out the juice out of the fruit to be able then to make the juice. And in addition to that, he has worked with the ARC, Agricultural Research Council, to be able to upscale it now to have beverages. Now, these products are actually now available in the Woolworths chain stores for consumption and its natural juice. Thank you.
How things are moving at DTI. Let's just look back at that then in the next 15 minutes or so and what we have had before we go to the detail of SRIP. And any other questions you wanted, let's just look at the first few pages before we went into the detail of SPI. Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa. Well, the whole thing, what we've heard here. Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Kotsi, Honourable Salah. Fine.
I think it's a very exciting program, and I think it's very well targeted. And I park at Cavendish Square very regularly, and it has changed my life. So thank you for contributing to this innovation. But I do want to ask why the numbers are going down. On the slide on page 5, in 2009, there were 57 approved projects, but you're only anticipating 25 with 58 million rand for 2014-15. And again, that reflects on the slide on the top of page 7, I don't know what, which is about the performance, SPII impact, performance data, and how they're also... the numbers are going down from total sales in 08 of 2,037 down to 2,237,000,000 to 193,000,000. I wonder why we shouldn't be going up on these matters. And I just want to say I think you missed an opportunity. South Africa could have balanced its budget if only we had given this grant to what's his name, the guy who sold his computer company. Mark Shuttleworth, because he made $30 billion or $3 billion dollars when he started making money. So we would have been able to build a lot of houses for his kickback after that. Thank you.
No, Honourable Mabasa.
No, mine is where we have listed the beneficiaries or the target group. I did not notice people with disabilities, so I just thought I should ask whether it is assumed or affects.
See?
Thank you, Chair. I would like to know, how do you get to identify these people with these initiatives? There might be, I mean, we might be missing out on a number of them where we do not know, we're not aware of. And secondly, how do you, in terms of the money spent, you know, do we measure that against the output and perhaps how that initiative will be doing in perhaps, the coming years? The last one would be the portfolio committee last year went to the Northern Cape, and at Kumba there was a product there, something that I can't remember what was the name. I don't know whether we can remember the jingle, the jigging. There was that, we were told that it's been initiated in South Africa, and perhaps we realized that it could be something that could be taken to other countries as well, and perhaps if you can follow that at Kumba, and perhaps it could benefit workers in that field. Thanks.
Honourable Kotsi, Honourable Salah.
Chair President, to start with, I want to go back to the same page, page 5, and just try to find out what informed the projection of the MTEF. And I'm taking this from the point that if you look at 2010-2011, for 22.8 million, you were able to get 20 projects. And for 2012-2013, it says to you the same number of projects you can now get for 52.7 million, almost double or more than double what you could pay for the same number in the previous, in the year or two before. But as you go further, you look at the difference trying to follow the same pattern between 2013-2014 and 2014-2015. It doesn't come up to the same kind of calculations. So to me, it doesn't really make sense that suddenly you can put double the amount for the same product. That is the first question. The second question would be on page 6, the top slide, the spatial distribution of the SPI. I am very unhappy of the performance countrywide. I think we are continuing to want to centralize the economy around two areas, Cape Town and Johannesburg. And this thing is in the long term dangerous for the country. We need to find ways through which we can begin to spread this economy to avoid congestion. Well, this congestion is something we're talking about, and it's getting worse daily. We have a lot of space outside of these two places in these other provinces, but we are not seemingly trying to take the jobs there. I was happy to hear that from Limpopo, a certain Ntatempe was identified, but I think it would give us good reason for us to focus on taking the job to where they are. That one is not a question, but just a criticism to say I am not comfortable with the way we do not do that. And if the IGC has not been doing this, it's time they run workshops in the different provinces to ensure that people are aware of this. And then coming back to page 9, you made an interesting presentation there. It's a very interesting innovation of removing, replacing the human with a computer, you know, human element in respect of your traffic cop being with you as you test drive to a machine. You're just told to drive, and the machine will do the job. But the question is how does it do it? If you pass the stop, it reflects in the in the computer that he has passed the stop. He did not stop. You didn't apply the brake. Okay. You will respond to them all at the right time. Those are the three questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Salam. Now, my pages aren't numbered because I've got a much bigger, you know, page by page on each slide, but it's the one DDG, the SPI impact, okay? I think it's page 7, is it? Now, when you look at that and you do your sums here and the stats and the percentages and you look at research and development, clearly if you have a larger, if you have X amount of research and the number of shop floor jobs created is 877, it will be lower then if you have a lower number of jobs, you still maintain the same. The research development may not have risen that much. It's actually the fact that the jobs have decreased, if you like. Can you see those analogies there? And the same under 64 and 61. So what to me would be helpful is rather than talking about a percentage of research and development as a percentage of sales, how much was there in research and development? And what is the ratio between the two? That to me would provide a lot more clarity than what we've got here, you see. So if we could get that just clarified. The other thing is I was listening to colleagues here, honourable members. You spoke about the previous slide, 6. And if you look at the yellow there for 2011, it would seem as if the new generation manufacturing, if you like, began to gain impetus into 2011. Because you look at the yellow, it's a lot smaller everywhere else. And then it begins to grow, you know, in the 2011 period. Does this reflect in some way the transition of the focus of where you're distributing and where you actually want to grow the economy and the manufacturing and the and where you'd like to distribute the funding in order to accelerate that change? The same question would apply, I think, Honourable Salah, did you raise this issue of the different provinces and the spatial distribution? I think that, again, it's going to assist the country in the second transition if you're able to redirect or focus on encouraging the development of new initiatives in these other areas as well. I'm sure they have just as many, and they don't all depend on infrastructure. I mean, it was raised here, the Shuttleworth one didn't depend on a lot of infrastructure. It was something that could have been achieved in Limpopo. It's a wireless issue, you know. Didn't need everything transported, etc., around it. So the question would be, is your awareness, the awareness of such a project and such a grant, are people aware of it? Or do you need to do more in that direction? And finally, the new democracy came about in effect, the people's, the only democracy, in 1994. But you spoke about developments in 1993 and the fact that this change began to take place in that year. And as we sit here, the IDC continues to manage this particular program for the DTI, which leads me to ask, perhaps we should have had IDC here as well, but I didn't realize this at the time. So over to you. I don't know, Honorable Hill Lewis, if you had a question or comment. No. So it'll be over to yourself, DTI.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'd like to respond to the questions in their order. First and foremost, just to respond to the issue of why are the numbers actually going down in terms of the support that we have been giving. One of the reasons is that the budget for the program was significantly cut in the 2009-2010 as well as 2010-2011. The initial budget was around 80 million and that was reduced to about 52 million in those financial years. And as a result of that, we could not have been able to support more projects. And the other thing, obviously, is in terms of the number of projects that were supported, there has been a decline because private sector was not giving priority to R&D, you know, as a result of the economic decline or about the economic crisis that was happening in the international arena. So normally when there's a financial issues happening around businesses, the R&D becomes the first target to be cut out. So there wasn't much participation in terms of investment in R&D. The second question really dealt with the issue of target groups for this particular program. Yes, I think there has been a deliberate intent to try and increase the participation of black entrepreneurs in innovation and technology development, so that they could use these technologies to actually build a competitive edge around their businesses, and for them to start using, you know, computers to manage their finances and so forth and so forth. So that trend we're trying to entrench by encouraging, you know, black business and women participation in the program by even providing, you know, an incentive really up to 85% in certain instances in terms of qualifying costs. To respond to the issue of supporting people with disabilities, yes, the scheme does not discriminate against persons with disabilities, and we're doing a lot in terms of trying to bring to the attention, you know, of all South Africans that the program is quite open ended. Although we do not find, you know, a lot of applications coming from people with disabilities, but we have seen, you know, some kind of gradual increase in the number of women-owned businesses participating in the program. The third question basically dealt with the issue of how do we respond or how do we identify people with, you know, innovative initiatives. And I think what we do is we are really working towards the issue of saying we need to go out to the communities and invite those people with new innovations to come on board and apply. And we're doing this through, for example, going on to the road shows with the DM in most instances. We go out with the IDC on road shows to try and, you know, speak about these programs to various people. Now, with respect to the measuring of value against the output, yes, we take a concerted effort to say, in terms of the investment that we make, companies need to report back to us for a period of 3 years to tell us how much they've actually made in terms of their sales, in terms of taxes paid back into the fiscus, and so forth and so forth, so that we can then be in a position to use the data to sort of like come up with all the statistics that are here. These do not come out of our heads. It is data that we get from the responses that we get from the various enterprises. And you'll see that in certain instances when we request them to report back, the numbers normally vary from year to year. You send out, if you go to slide number 7, if you look at the second bottom line there, you realize that we surveyed 91 and we got 64 responses. We surveyed 110 and we got 60 responses. surveyed 64, we got 50 responses. So those are the numbers that we really make use of in order to sort of like come up with a validation of the information that you find on top there. And this can be verified even through audits. Now, in terms of the issue of visiting the jigging at Kumba in the Northern Capes, we will definitely follow that up and try and see what can be done in terms of contributing towards that very process. What informed the projection of MTEF over the period? As I've already indicated, in the past few years, we had a significant cut, and flowing from that, we had also, challenges in the numbers of projects that we could support. And I think to add on to that, there was a time when we took a deliberate action to say, let us request fewer funds from cabinet, because what happens is that when you support projects, the technology is developed over a number of milestones. Now, if in a particular financial year many milestones have not been completed, then you sit with a lot of funds in your coffers that are not spent. Now, what we did was we tried to manage that process in such a way that we don't have a lot of money sitting as if it is parked on the program when it should actually be used for other priority areas. So it is that process that has led us to sort of like have this figures looking as though they are not talking to the projects that we supported. It was to a
okay. Just to add that, Chair. Just to add that point, Chair, so that it's clear. You see, that's why Mr. Baloyi talked about the 90 million, was it 98 million? The 80 million that was cut by the Treasury. What happened is that, like he's trying to explain, because we pay as per the milestone. You reach a milestone, then we give you the grant. Now, you'll find that the developers of these technologies were delayed, not according to the projection they gave us. Now, Treasury was looking at this, but now the drawdowns are not as quick as you guys projected. And then the money was accumulating. Then Treasury decided, no, we'll cut by 90. But now what happened was we have committed ourselves to these guys. We said, we're going to support your projects, although now they are delayed, but we have committed. So we had to honor the commitment. Then the commitments had to be honored by future MTEF. That is why we are now careful. That is why, for the projection going forward, we might find that they are not necessarily matching with the actual performance, like you were pointing to us, that for 52 million, we say we're going to support only 20. Now, part of that will go to fill in the gap that was caused by now the Treasury taking away that 90 million from our... But then it's just a matter of being prudent with the numbers so that you don't project things that we may not cover at the end of the day.
Okay, so thank you, DDG. Let me respond to question number 5 on the special distribution of the program, mainly centralizing the economy in Gauteng and Cape Town. I think, yes, we are taking cognizance of that, and we are attempting to spread the support into other provinces. On the question of how do we deal with the simulation against human involvement, like we're saying, the simulator is in a position to detect your reaction in terms of whether you see a sign saying turn right and then you turn left. That would sort of like give you marks and, you know, credits against all the errors that you commit. And as you count that, then you are able to come to a conclusion to say this person is not a very good driver, or this person could actually be considered to have completed the exercise successfully. With respect to the issue of R&D as a percentage of sales, I think what we are doing there is basically to say we're trying to measure the amount of money that has been spent in the development of a specific technology against the sales that are made out of that particular investment over time, and that's how we are able then to determine the impact of the program in that respect. I think we have also sought to cover the issue of the distribution in terms of the various sectors and how we're going to enhance that. And I think through our program, we are going to be in a position then to try and increase the participation of other sectors and moving away from the ICT and electronics. Thank you.
What we're going to do, we're going to move on, but just to note that we are going to be requiring a list of these projects, which I know you will have, and the jobs in each year per project with respect to R&D that were created. But that'll come, you can start thinking of that, because it will come as a question to the department to have for us in the next 2 weeks or so. But if we can, at this point, move on to the second part that we were, I think it was stripped, if I'm not mistaken, just a further expansion on that. Am I right? Let me just see the background.
Can I just get one clarity before we go to the
initiative of this DTI. Who was this?
Yes.
Okay, yes, Honourable Salah.
Yes. Just one clarity before we go. Is there a relationship between this test driver machine and the cameras on robots? Because these days there are cameras in the robots. It's so much that if you make an accident at the robot, they are able to go and get the time of the accident and what actually happened, whether you were passing the red robot or you were not, through that camera. They are able to get that through the computer. Is there a relationship between that and this initiative, or are they two separate initiatives?
You know, two different projects.
Thanks, and now we are moving to the trip in full is technology. The question.
Asked. Basically, it's just a simple thing. Are they the same project? Are they different projects? The one you spoke about, the learner-driver simulation one,
yeah.
And then the one, the cameras at the robots that pick up drivers making mistakes.
No, these are two separate projects.
You know what they do in Japan, though? You not only spend a full month at a driver training school, but they keep your test scores and your pattern. And if you have an accident, they look up that to see, you know, whether it could have been avoided had they been able to pick it up while you were training. So it begins to improve the system of training as well. So I just, not that I think any of us have got a full month to devote to learning how to drive, but as they do in Japan. To move on to trips, please.
Thank you, Chair. This one, as it says, Chair, it was designed mainly really for the development of human capital in the area of technology, science and engineering. So it's a tripartite kind of arrangement where the universities, government and industry come together and developed products mainly for the benefit of the students at the universities and also for the benefit of industry. A little bit of a background, it is administered by the National Research Foundation. It's an organ of state under the mandate of the Department of Science and Technology. It has an advisory board with a representation from industry, government, higher education, engineering council, and also the science councils. Again, here it's on the cost-sharing basis with industry, and TRIP supports science, engineering, and technology research collaboration, focusing on technology needs of participating firms. So the firm, if they have a technology-related problem in their product, they then approach the universities for them to do a research on the product or the problem, and then through TRIP they get funding also from government. That's the mission, creating knowledge-based international competitive South African industries. The priorities, Chair, just to support and increase in the number of black and female students pursuing technologically and engineering careers, to promote technological know-how within the SMME sector through the deployment of skills vested in these institutions, deploying them in the SMME sector, to facilitate and support the enhancement of the competitiveness of the BE companies, also to facilitate and support multi-firm projects in which the collaboration in the share of the project outcomes. So far, this is the performance of the program, Chair, starting from the 2009 financial year till last year. For approvals in the last financial year, we had 144.5 million. Number of project supporters, 248. Those are the number of students that participated. And mainly students, we are talking about students here at master's and PhD level. And there's a huge component of empowerment here and affirmative action in terms of a black student participating, also female student participating. BE Enterprises that has benefited from this program in the 2011-2012 is 199. And the number of researchers participating is 985. Again, the intention of the program is also to give research works to researchers so that they also write journals, and this is that benefits the economy and the world. And we have projections in terms of the number of students and number of researchers we're going to support in the current MTF process. These are the actual funds that have been awarded from the government side, and the funds that have been contributed by industry. As you can see, in the 2010, government contributed 139 million, and industry contributed 241 million. The three projects by standard industrial classification sectors, as you can see, Chair and honorable members, that is a spread in the last in the 2010 financial year. These are success stories. Again, Balo, if you want to say a few words, the project.
Thanks, PTG. Mr. Manamela is a researcher at the University of Limpopo. What basically he's doing is he is translating English words into Northern Sotho or Sepedi, and this he does through computers to say If you speak a word in Sepedi or Tshivenda, the computer will recognize that word and be able to respond to that in English. So it's like you'll have a situation where, for example, when you say "da," then this thing says "thank you." It translates it into English from Tshivenda to English, but using the voice recognition. This one is basically a project that's happening at that UCT just across the street. But basically what it does is it can scan the body of a human being in from head to toe in 13 seconds, and then it gives you the skeletal impact in terms of where you have pain, where you have sores and stuff like that, and that actually helps in terms of the X-ray machine, where if you've got a broken limb, then that can be picked up in 13 seconds within that scanner. Yeah, no, we can take you to UCT just across the street. Project by Professor Root is happening at the University of Free State. But basically what they are doing is they're developing detectors of cancer and other illnesses at a very early stage. And what they're doing is this is radio pharmaceuticals that when you swallow a particular pill, then this pill can go in there and shows you exactly what the problem is and where the cancer is located, so that it can be treated before it can spread in the body. And these are the students and researchers that are involved in the project. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It certainly would seem that CT scan would be cheaper than an MRI. Which I understand cost anything from 18,000 to 20,000, which most medical aids can't afford, and those that can give you one option to use because it's such a high amount. So if we are developing equipment that can begin to give you, much the same information, this is certainly a way forward for South Africa in that regard. But I just wanted to clarify two things, and then I will certainly open it up to the committee. Was I correct in understanding that this falls under science and technology, some of it? What is the relationship between science and technology and trade and industry, the two departments here? Do they have an overlapping mandate, or are they two very separate mandates? If you would respond to that, and then we'll take the questions here.
No, you can just.
The DTI decided that we are going to use the National Research Foundation to administer this chair. Why? Because in any way, the National Research Foundation, its work is to deal with the research institutions, to deal with the universities of high learning. So they have the structures in place already, to roll out such programs. So that's why we decided that it would be better managed by that institutions that falls under the Department of Science and Technology in terms of the mandate. You want to add maybe some more other than that?
Chair, maybe just to add in terms of what the DDG has already alluded to. We believe that the NRF is in a better position to provide information on researchers that are in their database. And they've got closer links with universities. And the investment that we put through the program goes directly to the universities and the projects that are within the universities. sufficiently skilled people for industry. That's why we have that link with the NRL.
Clarification. If we can look to the committee now, Honourable Van der Merwe. I saw several. Honourable Hill Lewis. Is it that at the moment? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I really just wanted to know if the presenters could share with us some of the things they do as a DTI to communicate what is available to people. Obviously, on the second THRIPS one, it's much more directed at universities and institutions of learning that are already doing research. But because it may answer the question that my colleague answered about the distribution. If we know how widely the information about what is available is distributed and how that is done, so that somebody with a bright idea can plug into that.
Thanks. Chair, mine's a similar question. Also, it goes to awareness and availability. There's an enormous, someone said earlier, and I really agree, there's an enormous number of very innovative and exciting projects and people and entrepreneurs out there who are just unaware of all of the fantastic support that you and your department provide through these and other programs. So if you could say a little bit about, you know, proactive efforts that you are making to increase the awareness of the funds available.
Chair, with the contribution by the department, for instance, on the medical side, those after they have been proved to be successful are taken over by private companies, private medical aids in this case, and tend to charge people exorbitant funds. Even, I mean, is there some way of control in terms of that? Because, you know, once the idea is there, out there, and it's then perhaps, let's say, these doctors take it and it's theirs, they run with it, and they charge people exorbitant funds, and you discover that it is not available to ordinary people, even though initially government assisted in making these available. The second question would be, how long does it take, for instance, for some of these initiatives, once they have been proven to be working, that they are rolled out so that they may quickly, be effective on the ground?
Thank you very much. Over to yourself, DTI.
I think in responding to the question around how do we communicate what is available with respect to the incentives, one of the practical ways in which to do this is to go to universities, because this is where the investment actually go. We then go to the universities and speak to the researchers in their various areas to say, here is a program that you can be able to access, to be able then to for them to go and seek industry partners, because we don't bring industry partners to the researchers. The researchers go there and find industry partners who will be convinced that the project that they are working on will be of benefit to the industry. And in addition to that, we do not support a project if there are no students attached to the project. So the researcher must find registered students within the institution to participate on the program before we can then provide the matching funds. So it is that process that we really use to make sure that with this particular program, because it's a partnership between industry and government, but happening at the university, that those things must be in place before, you know, we can disperse the funding. So we definitely are communicating with various
Just to add on that, we also have brochures at the Department of Trade Industry that has been, you know, designed and put together by our marketing division. And also in our website, the TTI website, these programs are there. But I have to admit that maybe we have to do more in terms of maybe even advertising in the business journals, you know, in the research journals and all those things, so that the researchers and the business, they know about it. Thanks.
There are other things as well. I mean, I look at these are breakthroughs, these are inventions, and yes, they're contributing to us, but to expand this contribution, do we have any idea what the cost is of manufacturing this equipment? And then once we've manufactured it, how many of these are in operation in South Africa? How long does it take to learn, you know, how to operate this? And are we able then to put one in every clinic or hospital in South Africa? What is the cost of this vis-a-vis the MRI scan? You know, to me this would be valuable, and then perhaps there's an opportunity for exporting such equipment. This is what I would like to learn about the project. What are these prospects? What are these opportunities available? Do you have the information with you now or not? If you don't have it, then perhaps we need to get it back in writing.
I think we will have to come back with a detailed report to the committee, showing all these benefits that we had.
Well, if you're going to be coming back with that detail, let's include everything, all these projects here. There's the one, the development of the Novel Nuclear Pharmaceuticals again. All of these are export opportunities, but also within the country. You've mentioned, I'm sure, only a few of them. You've highlighted a few. And from us, there may be many other exciting opportunities for us that we may not be aware of. I'm just looking here, you know, from agriculture right down to power. I mean, it's a vast array of materials. If we could begin to get an idea as to how these have benefited South Africa, the population. Someone raised the issue about medical aids or perhaps industry taking it over. I'm not that opposed to an industry taking it, but I'd be much more interested in knowing how many of our public hospitals are getting this benefit and what the export opportunities are. If we could get that detailed and then distribute it to us, Mr. Hermans, in this. But if you've got anything else to add, please do so now, DDG.
I think maybe just to respond to the last question in terms of how the successful projects are being taken by the private sector. What we do is when we purchase equipment for a project, that equipment becomes property of the university. So it must go into the asset register of the university. Therefore, we do not expect the university then to give this machinery to the private sector to go and start producing and multiplying whatever benefits or profits there. It is for research purposes within the university so that we can train the people as they come and graduate and so on and so on. So the equipment that we buy is not necessarily for production. It's just for research purposes. That would be all. Thank you, David.
I think the question was, when there's a potential to develop entirely new technology, how is that, what is the process from there to the potential commercialization of that technology, or it's just its rollout for the public benefit?
Okay, I think in terms of the technology development and the research that goes with that. What happens is that a researcher would conduct research and develop technology over a period of 3 years. Our maximum is a three-year cycle. If your project cannot be completed in 3 years' time, it's overtaken by events. Obviously, people are doing other things else. So we try to make sure that we encourage our researchers to complete their research in a three-year cycle. Now, once they have developed that, the programs are actually linked to each other, because the research that is happening in a university is different from the one that's happening in an industry where a product needs to then get developed and commercialized. So those processes, the incentives are actually linked in the innovation chain. So what we're saying is that once the university has completed its own component of research, it needs to then be taken up by industry to develop products that can then be commercialized by industry, because we don't expect universities to necessarily become enterprises, as it were.
I think you're missing the point, though, Mr. Beloy. What we're saying, this is trade and industry. This is trade. And while we welcome this development that you've just outlined to us, the innovation and the support for that, we must get that research and development. You yourself, I think, as a department, repeatedly said we don't want to work in silos, but this now is a silo development. We want to hear from trade and industry. We provide funds for research and development. This is how we do it, through TRIPS and the HR, and this part of the process is done at university level and encouraged there. The next part of the process, we want industry to take it on. You can't, I mean, to me, it's defeatist if we produce equipment and create it and invent it, and we don't share that invention. What is DTI doing? And if it is not doing anything at this stage, let us acknowledge that. Let's simply say, at this stage, we do not have the process in hand. And then we'll go to and find out from the minister why not.
No, I think we do exactly like you're suggesting, Chair. We support research. We buy the equipment. What he's saying is that the equipment that will be bought by the three funds that belongs to the university. And then we expect, because, as I said, it's a tripartite initiative. Industry is also there in that research development. We expect then industry will take the knowledge and then commercialize it. You know, I think the part that maybe the honorable members wants to know about is how do we ensure that the public now benefits? You know, the guys don't go away with this thing now and develop products, but charging people that exorbitant fees from the research that was supported by government. I think maybe that's why we as a department, we have to put some conditionalities now that, look, this was supported by government. You cannot now create a burden now on the shoulders of the poor people in terms of the exorbitant charges you put on this thing. I think we have to look at that. The other part I wanted to touch upon, I think it was asked about Honorable Cox. Yes, we still have a problem where government, CSIR and others, will support research at that level. But then when the results are good, you find that a lot of these technologies, they leave our shores, and the things they are produced in some way in Israel, some way in China, and everywhere. I think that's another part as government that we need to tighten, really. That the government is spending a lot of money, you know, funding these research institutions, but technology is still, you know, leaving the shores going over.
It's still an open question, which we haven't had responded to, and what we would like, if we can't get the, I think you've recognized where the gap is here. Now, we're not saying trade and industry is doing nothing. We're saying we don't know what is being done. and we would expect that being trade and industry, we would develop that side, and then another arm or unit in trade and industry would support the other part, so that yes, it can go into industrial development in our country. Yes, it can be delivered, you know, the same technology to all our hospitals to make use of, once we know it is safe, of course. But who is undertaking that? Where is this chain of delivery? That's what we need to know. And I do think it would be wise for, you know, yourself, DDG, in this particular division, to take back this challenge, this inquiry that we have, to the broader department of DTI to say, what is it? The committee are wanting to know a little bit more about how this chain of invention, the source of invention, can benefit the people as a whole, but also the country in terms of trade, industry, exports. Can we take that back with us and then come back, I think?
If it is something got to do with health, do we involve the Department of Health so that that linkage is also there? Because trade is something else, but if it helps, so that we know that that chain, even in terms of departments, is actually coming.
Taken on board that linkage as well. Yes, Honourable Salah.
But also linked to this, Chairperson, is that I'm observing here in page 14 that the number of black students and resultantly the number of students in general has been declining over the years to where we are now. I'm not sure. I went out. This question might have been asked before. You had 1,800 in 2009, and it has been going down. By 2012, we have 1,500. So that's a decline. Is there anything you plan to do to keep that further decline instead of to drive?
That's a question that could be addressed now. Let's just take Honourable Van der Merwes.
Well, I would have thought the department would have answered, because in the first part, I'm talking now about the way in which we recoup the benefits for the ordinary person. On the page, on the slide on page 4, in the first part under the SPII, there's an incorporation of a conditional repayment mechanism in the form of a levy based on sales. So could that not be extrapolated in the other instance as well, so that you actually claw back through when it does become commercialized, there's a levy based on the grant or the support given?
Certainly the one is a proposal that could be entertained and explored, and the other one I think is a question that could be responded to right now with, you know, the students.
Chair, I think if we look at the figures in the statistical table, if you look at the number of students, there has been a general decrease over the past few years, and I think one of the reasons that we established was that as projects became more and more expensive to deal with, the researchers took less and less students, and that was the problem that we said, no, it needs to be addressed. Now, if you look at the targets that we have set now, is to say increase your numbers to 2,200, meaning they need to jump from 702 to 2,200 in this current financial year's projection. So basically, yes, we're trying to force the number of students, not only blacks, but to increase, because there has been a general decrease in the number of students. And the reason that we were told was to say the value of the rand that you attach to the project has not increased proportionately with inflation. Therefore, the numbers dwindled. And not only that, Researchers have also argued that, you know, with the economic decline, we've had a situation where entrepreneurs or enterprises did not want to invest in research projects, and that's why they could not take up an increase in the number of students.
Is a challenge you're going to have to address. But we will raise this on our own, perhaps in a report back to yourself in which we request further information and all the interdepartmental cooperation, which we spoke so much about with co-ops, needs to occur here as well. And also within the same department, you know, the development of a stronger relationship between TRIP and SPI, you know, which was raised here as well, and a lot more linkages identified and established. So I think, members, it may be constructive for us to invite the DDG and his team back again when we've got this information to see, and also to ask him to engage with the minister or the DG directly to see how other divisions can be brought into this equation. Research and development cannot be isolated. It cannot be isolated if we're going to get the benefit of it. And I'm sure you appreciate that. So without mentioning dates now, let's talk about the principle of bringing the team back. Do we agree on that? Okay. So we will keep you informed as to when, because this is a really very exciting unit and division, and it's one that has to be expanded. I'm sure you would agree on that, Mr. Zakuda. But thank you to your team here. We really appreciate it. It almost sounded like Professor Baloy. I don't know if you ever were a professor. But,
but Jack, can they make sure that China does not take our ideas and own them?
No. Although, you know, the Chinese have a different approach to a lot of
issues.
I mean, Confucius, we must read him. Intellectual property, but be that as it may. Thank you to the team, and also is it Ms. Shinga, the Chief Director? Thank you, and thank you, DDG Zakordal.
Thank you, Chair. By the way, Chair, Ms. Shinga, the reason why she didn't say a word here, she's fairly new to DTI. She joined, I think, a month ago.
Releasing DTI, and we are going to release you extremely shortly. It's on that basis, the SPI, the SRIP. Is there anything else? Right, okay. So we've discussed the program. We will keep in touch with members in this regard. And those who may indeed be going to Kenya, I understand there isn't any need for visas. Am I correct? Yes. Okay. So we don't have to worry on that score. But essentially, that would be the subcommittee plus one or two others that would be going along to Kenya there. And then the subcommittee doing a small oversight visit to three provinces. We've taken a decision on one, a firm decision, and we are looking to finalize the other two with the cooperation of the committee chairperson, the subcommittee. And the last point, and he's not here today, and that is the Honourable Albert, who has not been at the last two meetings, has he? Was he here at the last meeting? Because we do need to engage with him in respect of the mandate we have with the Astronautical Society. And I will also consult with Honourable James in that regard as well. Members, thank you very much for your attendance here.